So I was at the Woodford Folk Festival in Queensland, Australia. It's a really, really huge, gigantic festival that takes place in the Australian summertime. And, you know, I was there doing my Red Room show, but there were loads of other poets and musicians, some of whom you've heard on the podcast before, like Nova Heart, which is this brilliant band from China. And there was even a bit of burlesque there. And so one night I decided, along with our friend Billy Lyer, to pop into the burlesque to see the show in one of the tents called Hot Brown Honey Burlesque. And I didn't really know what to expect. I guess that's not quite true. I'd been to burlesque once or twice before. I'm not a huge fan of burlesque. I don't really understand what the artifice and the art of it is. So I went into this tent and I decided we'd dip in. You know, what I saw in there totally shocked me, but not in the way that I think maybe you might expect. You know, it wasn't so much the content or the nudity or any of that stuff. What shocked me was the way that these women were playing with the form of burlesque. And it seemed to me that they were doing something more than what people normally get out of a burlesque show. And by that, I mean, we were really challenged to think about race, color, sexual identity, and gender politics in a way that I did not think was going to be happening in this burlesque show late at night in Australia. It was really revelatory, and I wasn't sure. I mean, there was a bit of anger, there was a bit of humor, there was a lot of dancing, there was definitely some titillation, but it was all very, very elegantly put together so that the audience got this feeling of like both excitement and also shame, but also joy at the same time. You know, we're dealing with a company of predominantly black women who were talking to an audience that was predominantly white. And so it was a really, really interesting aesthetic and dynamic. And they created this entire environment whereby the audience was looking at their own complicity and their own, I guess, their own belief system and their own belief system about their history and their past of their own culture. I'm speaking really abstractly, I know. So we're going to just dive into Candy Bowers from the Woodford Folk Festival in Queensland, Australia.
Hello, everybody.
It's the multicolored cultural laser. We travel the world for the boys and the girls, casting pots of wonder and amazement. Multicolored cultural laser.
Candy B, at the beginning of the show I say, you know, welcome to Hot Brown Honey Burlesque, a theatrical, sensual, political mess. And that's kind of what we wanted to make, something that had a hot pinch of black politics, but was also sticky and funny and things that we just laugh at. What we find is particularly, you know, this is coming from a whole lot of women of colour, that we have to either describe where we're coming from because there's so many stereotypes to kind of like deal with of our different cultures, and we never just get to do stuff without having to explain it or categorize it. We often, you know, even are censoring ourselves, so we decided to make a work that we didn't do that with.
How do you mean you were censoring yourself? Is this in previous shows or in this particular incarnation?
Just across our careers, because all of the artists we work with are, you know, bona fide beautiful artists that make dance theater and, you know, have dabbled in a whole bunch of different things, theater, music, and all of those different categories come with a series of stereotypes. The reason why this work kind of bloomed as a side project for all of us, because we're all collaborating from other companies and doing stuff, is because we'd all done something like I'd hosted a few burlesque nights, not seen one woman of color at them. You know, just through the absence, but also going, well, I know a whole bunch of really funky women who are incredible and a couple of queens. We could do this. But then what happened was when we said, let's do it, nobody brought like a Dita Von Teese style strip to the table. Everybody brought these really hilarious or really political responses to something from their childhood, their adolescence, something their parents had said. And then all of a sudden the show almost starts curating itself. We've worked with a lot of guests, so there are three core artists, me, Lisa and Busty, musical director, director and dance captain. And then we pick up artists all away, you know, so we've worked with Aboriginal artists and Indian, Filipino, Singapore, you know, and said, oh, what do you want to do? And they just do the same stuff, like this same kind of pretty overtly political, often very silly, very funny mash of their ancestry and their now.
It's really interesting because, I mean, my impression of burlesque, and I'm not like an expert, and I'm not even a big fan of it. My impression of burlesque is it's aesthetics. It's a lot of aesthetics, you know, and it looks great, and it's striptease, and it's a bit sexy. But then you scratch below that, and I don't usually find a whole lot of heart below it, a whole lot of meaning. And maybe that's just me. Maybe I haven't seen the right things. But watching this, I was thinking, oh man, you guys are really, really saying something. And it's amazing that like nobody from your company brought to the table anything that was just like, yeah, I'm just gonna get my cans out.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like Lisa would say, that's because our mum would smack our bums, right? Because, you know, for black women, our bodies have been constantly something that gets dissected and governed and controlled and directed. So we were like, well, what if we just wanted to do that? But none of us could bring ourselves to just do this, you know, kind of like, I'm just going to display my knockers thing. Like, we just couldn't do it. We just thought it was too, it's just not something that we were having a good relationship with. We were more like, because we, you know, we did our research and went, oh, that's what burlesque is today. I studied at NIDA and we did vaudeville and burlesque there. And I understand that the original concept was, you know, the original idea of burlesque was actually about ridicule and social commentary.
Was it? Yeah, because that's what I was wondering. If you were going back to some kind of thing that I had, that has been kind of lost.
That's right. It's been lost in this kind of Hollywood or, you know,
Betty version. Boop. Yeah.
That's right. And I think that, you know, because we love, I think in the media and Hollywood love to set up this idea of the perfect or the divine ideals. And sometimes I find personally language is limiting because I don't see them as ideals. I think the ideal is that every single person gets to be their full self, not a fraction of themselves, and love who they are. And what I see a lot and in those scenes and around the place is these concepts of beauty, you know, that are out of reach or in reach even. Some of the women, the dancers I've worked with or artists I've worked with that fit the mold are the sickest. They hate themselves the most. They don't identify necessarily as beautiful. They're in this like horrible kind of roundabout with it. And I just traveled to New York earlier this year and I saw some of the ladies from Brown Girl Burlesque, which are kind of our sister crew in New York. And it was just such a relief to be immersed in these kind of very queer, very political cultures where you go, I don't have to feel like I'm too much or not enough here.
Yeah.
Some of the best feedback I ever get from the show, there are a lot of people that are like, well, that was confronting. But the ones that I love are the people that come and go, I found a place to feel myself and to all the edges of myself. Because, you know, Hot Brown Honey Burlesque represents that spot too where we're pretty fierce and we don't back down from it. So sometimes I've had like white boys come up to me and say, are you guys all gay? Are you all lesbian? And it's like really funny. I don't know about the edges of everyone, but majority know. So there's this other thing that I think is really interesting. I think a lot of people identify as queer in the crew, but majority know, not the central three. Then I go, oh, so then we attach strength and power and fierceness and saying what you think to otherness, othered. As a woman, you're other if you're doing that. So you must be something. You mustn't want to be in a heterosexual relationship or, you know, you mustn't want to be in a Hollywood movie or whatever it is.
Is that because it's so confrontational?
I think so, probably. And also, like, if you've never gone, like I was saying, you know, I wish I was the same person, and a little bit I am, like at a dinner party when somebody says something like outrageously horrible or bigoted or whatever, right, for you to stand up and go, I'm not down with that. Everybody here, I'm leaving, because there are children at the table here too. And if they see us all accept and enable this behavior, they're going to think that's an okay picture of the world, you know, and it starts like sucking onto people, you know. So Hot Brown Honey Burlesque, we say exactly what we feel, you know. And, you know, sure, people are like, God, it's intimidating, or other people are like, so powerful, I feel so liberated. And other people, I find it really funny because other people just go, boobs, you know, yes. Like I've had old kind of dirty men say, like, I wish I was the Milky Man. And I'm like, you don't want to be the Milky Man. The Milky Man was probably something that I wrote that I thought, when I wrote it, I went, this is going to be really confronting. How can I keep it fun? And I'm my background is Khoisa from South Africa. That's my First Nations bloodlines. So same as Nelson Mandela and Miriam Makeba. And I watched a lot of her tapes. And here's this incredible singer, world singer, traveled the world. And with a smile on her face, she talks about the colonizer. So she goes, the colonizer, they took this and that from us. This song is a song we used to sing before they came. And then she'll sing the song. And so she got this politics out around the world while Nelson Mandela was still on Robben Island, but with this smile on her face. So that character, Happy Makwerwe, is based on her. And she also does the song The Lion Sleeps Tonight, where, you know, this English man came in and wrote this track based on an African song. And that constant, like, taking, and then shifting and then stereotyping, which is why I do a Lion King striptease at the end of the show, because that Lion King is, like, then our ultimate current stereotype, you know, for Africans.
And that's a great bit, too. I mean, yeah. Just going back, so the whole thing with the Milky Man was, like, the colonizers slept with and violated the African women, and then ended up making baby, like,
with them, light-skinned girls.
Light-skinned girls, and then
They preferred the light-skinned girls to be their maids or their children's baby nurses, wet nurses. So often you would have the child of a Dutch, like, man, so black mum, white dad, through rape or something like that, and then they'd go, wow, she looks pretty. You can come and wet nurse my grandchild, or even child, depending on how big. So then you'd have this weird, incestuous, crazy thing where these women were breastfeeding their father's children or father's grandchildren. And, you know, it's like so dirty. And I guess it's that thing of going, people want to go, oh, we've moved on. I've got a joke. I didn't do it last night for Happy Makwerwe, because Australia has some very similar history colonizing wise in regard to Aboriginal people here, where people go, oh, but that was then, let's forget about it. And I'm always like, oh, you just want to skippy the bush kangaroo, that part. Because this is the thing, you know, we're all standing here going, this hasn't been acknowledged. This is a part of our history. Like, I'm part white, part black, like, I'd like to say Blasian, part black, part Asian, with a sprinkle of Caucasian. And I understand a lot of my history. There's more I don't understand. And understanding what it meant and what it does to a people, and the constant things that go on, and the appropriation, like the mail order bride for Ben. He didn't know as a kid why they weren't allowed to watch Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, because Ben's a gay boy and he's super queer and he's super camp and he loves it, he's cis. And he's like, Priscilla, that's my thing. Why wouldn't my mum? My mum hates me, you know, in his teens, he was like. And then he watched it and realised they weren't allowed to watch it because his mother's a Filipino woman married to a white Australian man. And she has got that male little bride bullshit, you know, like jokes on her whole life. And so she doesn't want her kids to see this woman shooting ping pong balls at her ass. And then you don't, like, I'm sure in corporate parties or on emails, they don't even get it when a Filipino girl at work goes, can you stop with that? That's like so fucking wrong, you know, and it's not fair. And the film, like an Australian film like that, can set up this offensive thing that will mar all these generations of kids, little Filipino, you know, mixed kids for these generations. So his piece is a total like, hey, I'm going to put it out there and remind everybody of this history and this experience and this life that I lead, my mum leaves, and all got to do with these kind of cultural icons from our country. Yeah.
In both those pieces, you brought somebody on stage. In The Milky Man, you brought a Dutch guy up and you dressed him in diapers. And then in the Mail Order Bride one, you know, a package arrives and you called up a guy who had actually been to the show in Brisbane. And he was so excited about being there. And at the same, and I can understand why, but I also was like, this is where it breaks down for me, where I think it becomes amazing, which is like, it's fun, but it's not fun at the exact same time. And I'm wondering what your impression of, like, an audience member of who goes up and is just, like, thrilled to be getting a lap dance from a queen.
Yeah.
A drag queen.
Yeah. Look, there's so many levels going on in this show. Like, we just kept trying stuff, and we started going, whoa, they're into it. And I've even had friends looking around the crowd going, why are the crowd clapping and singing? Everyone sings The Milky Man, even though they're going, like, I'm seeing them register going, whoa, this is a part of my heritage that I haven't experienced, that I haven't, like, thought about my whiteness in this way before. And that's the other part of the show, I guess, because we're all black, we're all diverse. We kind of make the crowd think about their whiteness, and that's an agenda I probably have across my work, because I think that once we start really becoming aware of all of the edges of ourselves, then we can actually you know, move forward and not oppress each other.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because as a white guy, I don't actually think about being white very often, but as a, what did you call yourself? Blasian?
Yeah, Blasian.
As a Blasian, like you are conscious of it probably a lot of the time. I don't want to put a number on, but like loads.
I think there's a point in your 20s where, for me anyway, and I've found it in a lot of my friends who are from diverse backgrounds living in Australia, there's almost a point where you've been going, no, it doesn't have to be a thing, it's not an obstacle or whatever, I'm going to get where I go despite it. And then, you know, you just get there's the straw joke or the straw person that just says that thing that's really bigoted, and you're like, this is my life, man. Like, you know, like, come on, dude. How many more times can I hear this? Why is this a thing? I'm not making it a thing. And a lot of, you know, friends and stuff now, because we're in the performing arts, they're just like, there's so many people afraid of telling the truth or telling their truths and saying, yeah, it's been hard. I've had shows where really random people that have nothing to do with the arts will come and they'll see a show, and these themes run across a lot of the work that I've written, but very, very different genres. So I've written work for children, I've written, you know, spoken word hip-hop shows, that kind of thing. And so I had one show, my autobiographical show, Who's That Chick? This guy went home and he got all these Google images and he was like reading about me, and his wife was like, who's a blonde blue-eyed girl that I know from school, she was like, you got a crush on Candy, what's going on here? And he goes, no, I don't have a crush, I'm just trying to read everything about this woman. And she said, what, why, you know, I don't understand. And he broke down, like, you know, 35-year-old man, and he said, I know I'm not getting a promotion because I'm Chinese at work. And he'd never acknowledged the racism he was experiencing, because that's what we got brought up to do in Australia. Just pretend it's cool. Pretend it's cool. All of a sudden, it was like kind of 3 years ago, things just started really breaking. And when the whole world started going, what the fuck's wrong with Australia? And you've still got people that fight it. But I'm like going, you deny every single person's experience, the truth of those people that aren't moving the way they should be, or... It's not actually, and it's quite segregated country in a lot of ways.
I would say, I mean, I'm not from here, but I've been here enough. I would say massively. I was in Darwin once, and there was this event, and we were all hanging out inside this lovely bar, you know, and then there was a white picket fence, and then darkness in a park, and in the darkness were all the Aboriginal guys and women, and it was so weird to be in that space in the light, drinking beers, and know that out there, in the complete pitch black.
In the long grass, like they call the people in the long grass. And we, in Darwin, we did our show in Darwin, and we worked with a sister girl who's from the long grass. So that was an incredible experience as well, working with a TV. Like, I mean, if we're talking about oppression, she's probably, as a transgendered Aboriginal woman who lives in the long grass, would be the most oppressed person possibly worldwide, one of those, you know, like if you think about what the world has to offer. And we did like a Nicki Minaj mashup. Like, this is the exciting thing about the show. We go from that and we go, now what do you want to do? She's like, I want a headpiece, I want to look like a cockatoo. Like, we can do that, you know. And it's this, it's really important to us that you know, it's crazy. We've all trained at crazy, I trained at NIDA, like we train at crazy places to go, and now we want to make stuff that's going to break people's brains, that's going to break them open, you know? If they're up, you know, maybe even if they're not up, it'll sit in their back of their head somewhere at some point. They'll go, whoa. And I think it's so funny too, because the first time you ask for an audience member to come up, people are really kind of up, and in this show it kind of changes, because then they kind of know what they're up for, and people have to be very brave. So it really changes the nature of interacting as well. And it's a funny show to do at midnight, because it's actually a very intellectual show. And I don't think you can avoid it. Like, I think, because I was like, at first I was like, oh, maybe people will just go, oh, there's dancing. But then I think there's a point where you just, you know, it's what it's about. And I think in Australia we like to try and, like, stamp that fire out a bit, and I'm like, nah, let's blow this shit up.
That's such an important thing, like that idea, like, cause I think this is a big thing for women as well, like they're taking back the whole like catcall and the whistling and all that stuff, and turning around and saying, like, confront that person, you know, if you're with somebody, stop and confront it. And until you do that, you don't realize that actually how badly that's been hurting you, right?
Yeah, and that's it. I think we giggle so much and we go, oh my God, are you going to do that? Yeah, do it, you know? And we laugh and laugh throughout rehearsal and then we go, oh, that's really beautiful. So we're almost in this kind of, and it's quite collaborative, that kind of moment. So it's like we're sharing again with all these people that have been on the margins, all these women that have been on the margins going, oh, we share an aesthetic, actually. We share an aesthetic. We share a kind of a set of things that we look to that we, you know, like the afro or like things like that, the black power fist, to like silly stuff like twerking. And that's got to all be in there. We don't go, oh my God, twerking is like so ghetto. No, we're like, no, it's all of us. It's a part of our culture, which is why it's all in there. And that's the other thing that people find confronting is the baby doing a sexy dance. Like the baby doing the booty dance. A lot of Caucasian people have said to me, and I don't know what their backgrounds are, so, you know, like they just are white-looking people. It's probably the easiest way to go. We'll say, I found the baby stuff confronting. It's like, why? Are you trying to say babies should be sexy? You know? And I was like, you obviously haven't been in many black families or communities, because we dance from really small and we dance every which way, like from hip hop to partner dance. Like dance is a part of our culture, but also if you go out bush, if you've ever, anyone ever does any art working out around Australia, those kids really shake their booties. It's really similar to the stuff that happens in, you know, LA and the Bronx and Rise and all that stuff. So I'm like, we should be able to use all of our culture. We're not going to go, but not that bit, because that's going to make us look like, you know, this or that. I'm like, no, that's all of us. It's always a barrier too. Like we're touching on the stuff where in those situations when we are teaching kids, you know, we'll always have like the white boss lady say, don't let them do that cheeky dancing. And I'm like, because it makes you feel uncomfortable. Is that right? Maybe that's about your sexuality. That's about what your oppressions, not about them. You're putting that on them, you know? But then I'll have great conversations with the kids about how shit hip-hop culture is, or why they shouldn't just go, because if that connects to their worth, you know what I mean? So we'll always be dismantling it and playing with it. And then on the other hand, we've grown up doing it, so we're really good at it.
Yeah, that's really weird. This is the dichotomy of the entire thing you're doing, because it's like you're trying to dismantle it, but you're really good at it.
Yeah.
And it's fun, but it's...
Yeah, totally.
Because you've worked in a lot of different genres or mediums and stuff. My instinct with the burlesque was like, this is like a great thing to do as a piece of burlesque, because people come into it... with really such stealthy. A weird, it's so stealthy.
Yeah, totally. People have a concept.
Did you know that was going to happen before you did it?
Yeah, we knew. I mean, yeah, we've been around for like at least 10 years in and out of the carny world. I'm about to take a contract to work with Cirque du Soleil on their international tours as their ringmaster. So we've always been in and around the world. So we didn't come to it thinking, oh, we'll just try this. We came going, remember that, remember this. And then because people come, and we have had great success, people buy this show off the picture because they just think, oh, the black girl's gonna strip, awesome, voyeuristic. But the voyeurism stops when these people are actually implicated in the storylines, so it's kind of fun. But yeah, we did know that burlesque would get a certain type of crowd, and they were maybe a mix of, you know, we want our community there too, because they love it. They go crazy.
The burlesque community?
People of colour, women of colour, queers, you know, that kind of academics. That's my crowd.
Academics.
It really is. They get into it because they're like looking at all this meta shit and intertextual referencing and stuff. We knew that we were going to get the guys, particularly in Australia, that want to go and see boobies and stuff. So I said to Bussy, like, we want to make this essential experience for these people too, so they're going to feel things and their minds and their bodies are going to be like at war at points, you know. They're going to laugh when they don't want to laugh. They're going to sing and they're like, am I complicit in this now? Because, you know, we were all grew up having to sing really racist shit, you know, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, catch a nigga by the toe. Nobody said, hey, that's not right, you know what I mean? And I'm 34, so yeah, that's my lifetime.
That's my generation. You were doing that. Oh my God, we did not have that. Yeah, that was not okay in America at that time.
Welcome to Australia. Welcome. Yeah. And that's the thing. So I'm like, now you can sing this. And then this song is going to be caught in a loop in your brain. You're going to have to think about it.
When you were doing the research, did that change things at all for you? Like doing the research in the history? And why do you think it's important to get that those kind of history lessons into the show, do you think? Why is it important to look back? Why can't we just say, hey, come on, we're all cool now.
Yeah.
Everything's all right.
Yeah. I think it's because the truth is that history impacts our everyday life still. If we were all cool now, we would be all cool now, and we're not all cool now. Do you know what I mean? So we still don't have representation or people being heard or enough people feeling even confident enough to be writers. Like, The Guardian still has to do, you know, special measures to get diverse writers into the pages, and that's not because the candidates aren't there. And in Australia, more and more, there are such amazing actors and writers and people. Now it's clearly about bigotry.
You said there's three roles that you get offered as an actress.
Yeah.
What were they?
Tituba, wet nurses, and the maids, like the maid in Kiss Me, Kate, in all those shows. And that's what I find interesting too, because I just went to New York and I was still like, we did a bit of a behind the scene thing and went to Broadway League and Broadway. And I was like, there's still only three shows on Broadway that there are a lot of black people in, like Book of Mormon. There was a Motown show and Lion King. That's still, there's only three shows on Broadway. They're not like recasting Sandy as a black girl or an Asian girl. And then I'll go to the drag world, and we've worked with a lot of drag artists, and they're like, not even in the queer like drag productions will they cast an Asian as Sandy. I'm like, that is preposterous. That is stupid stuff, right?
Where does why not? You have to. You can't, there's no rational answer for it. Nobody would say that it's racist, but the system is racist.
And that's the concept. I think when you break down white supremacy and what consciousness means, I think that's what we're breaking down. Because somebody might go, "Hey, I'm not a white supremacist," and it's like we actually all are. We've lived this way. This is the society we live in. That's the TV. Really, only straight white boys should be watching TV because they're the only ones whose confidence will get boosted as they grow up. Everybody else is othered and the crazy person or the drug dealer. You know, like in Australia, it's constant that you'll get a casting call. Like, I think Ewan McGregor just shot a criminal movie or something out there, and all the police, they ask for Caucasian men. And all the thugs, they ask for people of Islanders. This is like specific shit, right? And this is our thing. And everyone's like, but they are. I'm like, no, dude. There are fucking numbers of people who are incredible in all different aspects of life, but we are not showing them or representing them yet.
You're telling me there's Asian firefighters.
I'm telling you. You know, doctors, leading men. And, you know, this breakdown for me, when I get to the, like, heart of it all, because I do have a character called MC Platypus, who's a character for kids. I look at these kids and I'm like, the world would be a different place if they all grew up feeling right, that they didn't grow up feeling wrong, whether it was a part of their body or whether it was because they were Asian. Like in Australia, so many elders and so many people from multicultural backgrounds will say, you know, they grew up going Chinese, being Chinese was wrong. And that's like probably across cultures, Western cultures. First Nations people are the most discriminated against in Australia. And I'm not just making it up. I've done the stats. I go to the Immigration Museum and I've been a part of all of the research movements and stuff. So it's like, you know, you get a feeling, but then you back it up. And you asked a question before about why do we do the research? And I mean, I kind of like research anyway, but for me, looking at Dita Von Teese and going, okay, I want to do a Lion King version. Oh, she has that headgear on. I'll reappropriate that. I'll use that structure, but instead of, because she does this thing where she presents her body and leaves, and I've got a pretty good feeling from watching her video, she has no rhythm. She can't dance. She has no skill. Her skill is burlesque, or what burlesque has become, which is stripping. And I think she's beautiful and it looks beautiful, but I think lots of people are beautiful. I think Busty's beautiful. I think Benja's beautiful. I just have a problem with that being the only concept of beautiful, and that being some kind of like end of a mountaintop thing. If we start going, no, that body's wrong now, that body's better, we stay in the binary, we stay in the hierarchy. And I'm like, no, throw it all away. Work out who you are. And you know, I've got our mum and our sister, Busty's my sister too, the DJ. So our other sister's often saying, like, don't do that, you know, like people will judge that, you know. And I often say to her, I think that you don't love me, because if you loved me, then you would want to support my development as a human being to being my full self. And not speaking up would be me being a fraction of my full self. If that makes people feel uncomfortable, I'm not doing it to make them uncomfortable. I'm actually doing it because I think it's the truth that needs to be raised. And I'm a creative person, I'll probably come up with a number or a track. You know, that's second nature to me, to go, okay, I want to sing about that. Let's make up a song that sounds like an old folk song on the Milky Man. That's funny. And the funny thing is, you know, the amount of people in the industry that go, you should audition for Lion King. And I'm like, I couldn't do that. I know I don't know if I should.
I'm not allowed.
But you know what I mean? I'm like, I just couldn't do that. It's just so limiting. And, you know, for Disney, it's the Lion Sleeps Tonight all over again. I'm like, now I'm going to write my own Lion King. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I feel about having an original voice and not really backing down.
Candy Bowers, everybody. One of my favorite people on the planet. If you're interested, Google Hot Brown Honey Burlesque. You'll see loads of videos and music clips, and you can read a bit more about it and find out where they'll be appearing next. And of course, if you're in Berlin and or you happen to have friends in Berlin, do tell them about our great Culture Laser Live episode, which is going to be taking place on the 8th of June at 8 p.m. at Altes Finanzamt. It's going to be a huge show. Loads of old friends, 3 ukuleles, electronic music, films. It's going to be an extravaganza, and I'll be drinking Buckfast and sharing it with guests. And we're going to be having weird and wild conversations, I'm sure. 8th of June, 8 p.m., Altes Finanzamt. Also on the podcast, Busty Beats, and she put this track together for us, and we're going to share it with you. It's called Yo Mama So Fat. It's got Candy B and Busty Beats on it. It's been a fantastic podcast. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be back in your ear soon. Yo mama so fat. So fat. Yo mama so fat. So fat. So fat. She got it like that. Your mama so fat, she got it like that. Your mama so fat, she got it like that. You been banging on her booty like a rat-a-tat-tat. Your mama so fat, bass lines and drum beats mark her thighs and her feet when she walks down the street. And her back is so sweet, and her hips admit heat. And the banging in her panty activates her cleat. Ski, 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 ski. Your mama so fat, Snoop Dogg and Akon still be icing up they balls, cause she went for so long. Had to bring Biggie Smalls back from the dead, made him write 3 verses while giving her head. Your mama so fat, she got it like that. Your mama so fat, she got it like that. Your mama so fat, she got it like that. You been banging on her booty like a rat-a-tat-tat. Your mama's so bad, she is an earthquake. When mama gets mad, she makes the earth shake. She's off the Richter, she's off the hook. Like AC/DC, boy, you're gonna get shook. Your mama's so fat, she as big as a city. Witty and fitty, she not itty bitty. Why you tell jokes about a woman so pretty? You came from her kitty, you drank milk from her titty. Come on. Yum, 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 yum. Like a rat-a-tat-tat. Your mama's so